You're listening to Investify, preaching financial independence and assisting investors to achieve a more flexible and free lifestyle through smart financial planning and real estate investing. If leaving the corporate world and jumping into this thriving industry is what you desire, tune in and listen to stories of like-minded individuals who made the leap to financial independence.
What's going on, everybody? You are listening to Investify. My name is Craig Kurlop, aka the Fi Guy, and I'm here with my co-host, Miss Ellie Garson. What up, Ellie?
What's going on, Craig? How are you?
I'm doing so good. How are you?
I'm also doing so good.
What's been new with you? Do you give me the update? Give me the down low.
The down low has been a lot of personal stuff, like a lot of vacations. I went to a wedding, you know, September, October, that's when everyone gets married. So spent some time out in Utah and then getting ready for EXPCon and BPCon and think there's something else as well. Actually, I think there's two more things. There's a lot of travel this season.
Yeah, I feel like the fall is always like conference central, I feel.
Yes.
And so it will be fun. We'll be seeing you at BPCon. For those of you guys that are coming to BPCon, the Fi team is hosting a dinner. Allie is going to be there. I'm going to be there. A couple of our agents are going to be there. And it's a totally all expenses paid. It's just on the Fi team dinner. And it's supposed to just get only 15 and 20 people are going to be able to come. And it's just going to be a nice, intimate little dinner with all of us. And so if you are interested in potentially coming and getting a free dinner and hanging out with us for a night, go to thefiteam.com/BPCon. To fill out the form, and we'll let you know a couple days before whether or not you've got a seat at the table or if you don't. And it'll be a fairly random thing. We're expecting a lot of people to sign up, but you know, it's okay. Like, I think either way, we'll see you at BPCon no matter what. So
that's so cute. I didn't even realize that. Dang, that dinner was on the house. Oh my gosh. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Of course. Of course. But anyway, speaking of dinner. And houses and cowboys. We've got the finance cowboy, aka Jaron Sustar, on the podcast today. And Jaron has become a friend of mine over probably the past year, and he's just rocking it. I just like love his story, and I love it's like a breath of fresh air for me to just like hear that people are investing just like the good old normal, old-fashioned, boring way, you know. Long-term tenants, single-family homes. I mean, burring, of course, it's pretty old-fashioned still. And he's still making it work. And so I just love that.
Yeah. And the not getting distracted, which I like mentioned later on down the road, but it's a theme throughout his life. And that is how you go far, is don't let anything distract you. Once you pick one type of investment strategy, stick to it. Give it time and continue doing that. If it's working for you, continue doing it. At that point, don't expand out, you'll go far that way. So I really like this episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, me too. And he's such a good, genuine dude too. I think all the morals he teaches, and it's amazing because he's only 5 or 6 years in, right? And so you guys just starting out, literally in 5 or 6 years, you can be where he's at, right? I mean, I'm the same way. I'm 5 or 6 years in as well. Like, we're no one special. We just follow a formula, follow a process. And we just learned about this in 2017 instead of 2023. But guess what? In 2029, 6 years from now, you're going to be the ones knowing about it. And you know, you're going to be educating people who find out in 2035. So it's all about just letting it go down the generations. So with that being said, let's bring on Jaron Sustar, aka the Finance Cowboy, onto the show. This episode of Investify was brought to you by the Fi Team, a team of investor-friendly agents that service all 50 states. If you are looking to house hack, to invest, grow your portfolio, and want a true investor-friendly agent on your side, go to thefiteam.com and click Get Started, and we can't wait to have a good conversation with you. Jaron Sustar, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you doing today, dude?
What's up, Craig? I appreciate you having me, man. I'm excited to hang out.
Yeah, I really appreciate you you coming on. And you know, I got one of your t-shirts and it's one of my faves, just to let you know. So if you don't have a Finance Cowboy t-shirt, then you're missing out because they're super comfortable. So
dang, I guess I'm missing out.
You are missing out. I should have wore it today. I do wear it like once a week, not going to lie.
That is all. Allie, I'll have to get you one. I'm sorry our team didn't send one out. We'll have to make a note to get one ASAP. They're
okay, awesome. I did not mean for that statement to be like moochie. I was going to buy one. I will buy one.
No. Nobody's buying it. It's all a gift. So we'll get you hooked up. They are comfortable. I didn't choose the style, but whoever did, I guess it was my assistant. Fantastic job. So
yeah, we'll give them two thumbs up there. And so, you know, your parents call you Jaron. Your fans call you Finance Cowboy. We're going to have to understand where this all happened. So why don't you take us back to kind of the start and that shift you had from traditional American dream life to a life seeking financial independence.
Oh man, what a journey it has been. I'll tell you, when the light comes on to when you learn that there's more to life than just going through the status quo, it's a very powerful moment. Now you have to act upon that moment. When you realize it and start to put plans in place and actually go and execute it, it's pretty awesome. And so I grew up in middle of nowhere, South Carolina. My dad's a pastor. So, you know, great family home, but pastors don't make a ton of money unless you're one of these, you know, mega church pastors. I guess they probably do pretty well for themselves, but that wasn't us. We were a church, a good sized church, but in a small town. And so, you know, money wasn't a huge topic. Financial freedom wasn't a huge topic. It just wasn't something that we focused on in our home. And, you know, we had good money principles, but, you know, lived a fine life, weren't scraping for food or anything, but it was your standard, hey, American dream, buy your house, have a mortgage on your cars, all that good stuff, the standard stuff. And, you know, that's what I grew up in. And I don't know exactly the exact date, but I can remember when the light bulb came on for me to where I was like, bro, I don't want this to be my story. I think as I graduated college, I went and played baseball at Charleston Southern University in Charleston, South Carolina. And I graduated and started working at Cintas. I was making like $45,000 a year. I had to be in the plant at 4 o'clock every morning, driving a box truck around, delivering clean uniforms, picking up dirty uniforms, changing out like urinal cakes and guys' urine. It was just a crazy job. It was fantastic to start. I learned so much about business. It was a great starting place, but I think I just looked at all the guys around me who were and still are great friends of mine. So it's not like a condescending comment that I'm making here, but they were older, 40s, 50s, some of them in their 60s, and they were still going through the same motions every day, and they had to show up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning to continue providing for their family. And I think for me, I got curious and I said, okay, is this the only way or is there another option? And I found that there's another option and took that path.
So how did you find out what that other option was?
Well, I think it started for us, which everybody kind of has like who they run into or the book they read or whatever that kind of sparks their interest. I think mine started with Dave Ramsey, believe it or not. I'm a big real estate guy. I have a lot of debt on real estate. So it's funny that I really like Dave Ramsey, but I really like Dave Ramsey. I think if Dave Ramsey had truth serum, he would say, good long-term stable debt on real estate isn't bad, but he can't say that because he'll destroy his entire message if he does. But I remember we were at a church service one night. We were living in South Florida. I'd taken a job out of Cintas and got into pharmaceutical sales. Okay. So I'd had the enlightening moment at Cintas, realized I needed to do more, got into pharmaceutical sales, but it really really started taking big time action when I heard Dave Ramsey speak about handling your finances at this church service. I didn't even know who he was. And he starts talking about the standard American life, how people just are like ravaged in debt and they stay in bondage their entire life and they're never free. And there's actually another side of that. And he went through his baby steps, you know, get your emergency fund, pay off your debt, all the good stuff. And I was like, okay, this is simple enough. But I quickly learned like money's very emotional. So you can learn what to do, but you have to actually implement it. And I saw the stories and testimonials of people he was telling who within 2 to 3, 4, 5 years, they're out of debt and they're able to put themselves in a position that allows them to live, like he says, like nobody else. And so that was kind of like, I had the original aha moment working at Cintas, but then like I really, really, really started putting things into action when I came across Dave Ramsey. And we were riddled in over $100,000 in debt. And we were 23 years old, my wife and I. Jeez. I came out with over $60,000 in student loans, bought a wedding ring. I'm from South Carolina. Got to have a jacked up truck. Bought the jacked up truck. Had about $10,000 in credit card debt. next thing you know, we're 23 years old behind the eight ball with all this debt. And so it was like, we got work to do. And so we implemented those steps. And that was 2013, 2014-ish. And by 2018, we were out of all of our debt. And then it got fun. Because for those 4 to 5 years, you feel like you're wading through quicksand. It's like, I am trudging, just making, you don't feel like you're making progress, although you are. And then it got fun because then we started investing, got into real estate. We talk about all that. And it's been, that's been the fun part.
So how did you keep going though, right? Like if you're trudging, there's so many people that want to back down, right? And this doesn't even, this is obviously the first big obstacle you had, but whatever obstacle, man, you look at it in the day to day and it looks like nothing's happening. And then, you know, how do you see the picture? How do you see the bigger picture?
I think my dad, even though he's a pastor, so a lot of people don't look at it as like a business. Like it's not a business, but there's a lot of principles that apply, and he started something from scratch and built it. I mean, he's got like 1,000 members at his church now. It's very good for the size town we're in. And so he was kind of that entrepreneurial, go out, figure it out. And although his wasn't like financial independence, his was focused somewhere else. I was able to learn a lot of principles from him as far as perseverance goes. Because when you're starting a small business, when you're starting a new church, I don't care. You're going to figure out if you last, if you stand the test of time, you're going to know what it takes to stand the test of time because most people don't. And one thing that he instilled in me when I was younger was you can either play now or pay later, or you can pay now and play later. And so my why, I think it's huge to focus on the why. If you know what your why is, my why was I want to be able to wake up every day and do what I want to do. To do that, I'm going to have to pay now so that I can play later. And, you know, having that instilled in me from my dad, and then keeping the focus on, if I just keep doing what I'm doing now, then it's going to pay off in the future. I think Alex Hormozi, I don't know this quote exactly, but it's like whoever can go the longest without seeing the actual gratification or the outcome of what they're trying to accomplish is going to accomplish something even larger. It's what it felt like for me. It's like every day just paying off a little more debt, a little more debt, a little more debt. I know it's going to pay off. I know it's going to make sense. I know it's going to be the best thing in the world. 5 years later, it was. And let me tell you, it was as good as advertised.
Yeah. You have to have such grit and mental strength in order to pay off debt for 4 years, right? Like that's a long time to still not be in the investing game, if you want to call it, a game. A lot of people don't have that in them because they're so used to the immediate results. Hey, I want the car now. I have a credit card. I got the car because I have a credit card. And that's just like what they've been programmed now. So they can't even think about, like, even once they find out what real estate investing can do, they don't want to wait 4 years to get started. So, which is why some people, I think, to satisfy that immediate gratification that a lot of people have, some people will suggest both, like pay off your debt, and if you can buy a rental or buy a property, start that at the same time. What are your thoughts on starting both at the same time versus what you did, which is just paying off debt and 4 years later getting started?
I think it depends on the kind of debt you have and the kind of income you have. If you have a huge income coming in where your debt payment per month is minimal and you can confidently go buy real estate 100%. Go do it. You know, real estate can be a capital intensive endeavor. I buy a lot of properties. We'll talk about this later on if you guys want, that I don't have to leave a lot of my own money in the deals through certain strategies that we use. That's been how we've been able to scale. But at some point, money, somebody's going to call for money. Like if you own real estate long enough, somebody's going to call and I got a repair request for $600 literally yesterday for one of my rentals. For the tree, all these huge limbs are hanging over. Well, the average American can't afford a $400 expense. And so if you fall into that category, you don't need to be buying real estate. But if you're making $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year, and you know, yeah, you may have some debt, you could justify doing it. I still tend to lean towards, let's get the bad high interest debt out of there. And before we go buying real estate, it's just what I tend to lean towards. But I'm not going to sit here and look at some high income earner and tell them not to do it if the numbers just blatantly make sense.
Yeah. One thing I'll add to that too, is it really depends on the real estate investment as well. And then like what those, you know, it's what the rate you're getting is, right? Like if you've got some debt that's at 10, 11, 12%, like most people would be like, you need to pay that off very quickly. And I would agree in most cases. But the only place I would disagree is if you're not house hacking, right? Or you're not doing something like where you're going to get such a massive return on your investment that like the 10-11% is like almost laughable. And so a typical real estate investment is going to be 20-25% down. You're going to get a cash on cash at 8%. And if it's a pretty good deal, you'll get like an IRR or a net worth return on investment of around 20%. But with the house hack, we're seeing cash on cash returns at like 60, 70, 80%. And just because you're putting such a little amount down, it makes a lot of sense. And so I couldn't agree more though. Like, get the high interest credit card debt out of the way before you start making a career of investing in real estate. Because house hacking is not a career. The downside of house hacking is you can only do one a year. So it's great for just starting out. It's great for like, I mean, you might as well do the one a year and make a crazy good return. But if you want to truly scale, pay off your credit card debt first and then scale your real estate.
I couldn't agree more, dude. Yeah, house hacking, no brainer. If you're in debt and you need a place to live, go buy your place to live and rent out the other rooms. If you're buying multifamily, rent out the other units. That is step 0A. Like that, start there. Fantastic place to start.
Awesome, man. And so why don't we kind of get into, you know, where you started, right? So you were at this job that you hated. Well, maybe you didn't hate it, but you knew there was something better. And then you got into this, was it a sales role, you said? A pharmaceutical sales? Why did you take a sales job?
I knew that your earning potential, if you're not starting your own business, if you're going to be an employee, it's hard to beat sales. A lot of times, you know, you're uncapped, quote unquote, their commissions are only going to be so high, but you can make a decent income. I actually went to Cintas, paid my dues there because I knew that like the good sales companies hired people who had been through Cintas training. And so I paid my dues at Cintas and then got into pharmaceutical sales next. And it wasn't quite as lucrative as I thought. I got with a startup and they paid pretty low, but my income started to creep up a little bit. And, you know, I think part of the financial independence equation, you know, you got to budget, you got to pay off debt, you got to cut expenses. But man, you really can expedite that process if you can increase your income, because that income is the fuel that propels your growth to financial freedom. And so the more of it that you have, as long as you allocate it correctly, the faster you're going to reach freedom. So in my mind, I was like, always trying to create more income. Every job that I've had, I've always been trying to make myself better at it, be able to move into another role that's going to pay me more. But then I've also always had a side job in every job I've had. At Cintas, I used to deliver fruit on my day off. When I was pharmaceutical sales, I started a pressure washing business. When I got into medical device sales, I started investing in real estate and then eventually doing Finance Cowboy. And so I think it's important to always be looking, how can we continue to stack income? Because that's going to either, number one, help us pay off that debt faster. Number two, allow us to invest more, which ultimately is going to lead us all to our goal of that freedom.
Awesome. I love that, man. And so let's get into a little bit about how you stumbled upon real estate. I mean, I think pharmaceutical and medical device sales, I know a couple of people in those industries and they make a ton. And so what made you not want to stop there and decide to go into real estate?
Well, you learn income's just income. I mean, I work with people who make a lot of money and they still live paycheck to paycheck. It's kind of sad. You know, maybe they're a member of a country club and drive a G-Wagon, but they're stressing out every week because they don't have any money left over. And so I learned that if you're going to make your income count, it's got to be invested. And so when I looked at all the other types of assets you could invest in, real estate just made sense to me. I mean, pretty simple guy. And so if I look back over history and just say, okay, what is something that has made a lot of people wealthy essentially since the beginning of time? And it's been real estate. People who own land and people who own property tend to get very, very wealthy. And what's the statistic? 90% of millionaires own real estate. So I was like, okay, let's not reinvent the wheel here. Let's buy real estate. And I got even more interested because my best friend, Gaston Albergati, he got into real estate right when we got out of college, had his license, was doing some brokering. And then they went from like the commercial space to they built out this team where he was going and was a bird dog to go find rental properties, like single family home or residential rental properties. And so they would find all these deals and oftentimes they would present them to a buyer. So they weren't wholesalers because they weren't doing assignment fees. They were representing as brokers, but they had a lot of leads coming in. Well, just organically, they started adding those rentals to their own portfolio. Sometimes they would go in as partners with potential buyers. Other times they'd find just a great deal and they'd be like, we're going to buy it. Well, next thing you know, when we graduate college, Gaston's, call it 22, 23. By the time he's 27, I think it is, I'd had to ask him, or he may punch me in the face for saying this publicly, but I'm pretty sure he was worth over $2 million by the time we were 27 years old in 2018. Cool thing is, from 2013 to 2018, while I'm paying off debt, we're best friends, we're newly married, and we don't have kids. I'm living in Florida, he's in South Carolina, so we're just talking, you know, 3-4 times a week. When you don't have kids, you can just talk on the phone all the time. Now, if somebody calls me, I don't know the last time I've actually answered my phone because I don't have time to do it. But at the time, I did. And so I'd tell him about my business, and then he would tell me about real estate. And so, you know, a lot of people, they listen to different podcasts or read books, which I did, but I got schooled in real estate from my best friend without even knowing either of us were schooling each other. He was just telling me about all this stuff because it was all new to him. He's so excited about it. Well, I'm picking up and he's like, bro, I can buy this property. And then I go to the bank and I bought it at such a good price and I fixed it up a little bit. Then the bank wrote me a check and I was able to get all that money back. And I'm like, what's that? He's like, well, it's called a cash out refinance. And like, he's just telling me all this stuff. And I'm just like picking it up and I'm learning it, but I'm not acting on it. I'm wanting to, because I'm getting jealous in a good sense, but like, I'm like, I stayed focused on paying off my debt. So we moved back to South Carolina in 2018. We started having kids and I was like, I got to get back home. Got to have some family support here. And, you know, Gaston lives 20 minutes down the road from where I live now. And, you know, I'm like, man, I'm finally out of debt. And he's like, bro, it's time to start buying. He's like, this has changed my life, dude. We're 27 years old and, you know, got a couple mil to my name. He's like, you got to start buying. And so he actually like helps me go find this first deal. And so the first deal was in Greenville, South Carolina. He was a bird dog. His team found it. He brought it to me. He's like, you're buying it. I was scared. I tried to back out. He wouldn't allow me to back out, forced me to the closing table, bought it for $68,000, put about $10,000 worth of work in. So call it, I'm all in at 80. And it rented for, I don't know, $1,000 a month. And I sold it 3 years later for 140, and I didn't put any more extra work in it after that. And so that was my first deal. And he helped me, guided me through the process of knowing what to look for, where to look, did it make sense? This is how much it's going to cash flow, all this good stuff. And that was where I got my first deal and got my start in real estate.
Oh, man. All right. If it's all right, dude, we're going to have to go in deep into this deal. And so we're gonna get all the numbers here. And Allie, you know what time it is, right?
It's time for the
For real deal.
Here we go.
All right. Yeah, this is the first deal you've ever done. You already got into it, man. It's like you're a step ahead of us. But let me just brief on you on what we picked up, and we're going to ask some more questions about it. So you bought it for $68,000. Your buddy bought it for you, so it sounds like it was off market. Is that right?
Exactly. From another investor.
You put $10,000 into it, yada, yada, yada. Okay. And so where did you get the $68,000?
So I actually loaned it from a bank and I put a down payment down.
Okay. And the bank was willing to go that low?
Yeah. So they loaned 80% of that purchase. And so whatever that math is, I had to put what, 13 down? Is that right?
Okay. And where did you get that 13?
I had saved it up.
Dude, just dragging through the trenches, right?
Yeah.
I know that like feet through the quicksand feeling that you were going through when you're paying off your debt and saving up. So how scary was it for you to spend that $13,000?
It was the scariest thing I've done in so many ways, because I had just spent all my money to pay off debt. Then I had finally saved up money enough to get me this house and do some rehab on it. But you have to remember, I got my start in Dave Ramsey. And so I just paid off all this debt. And now I'm going back, I'm going to a bank to get into debt. And I had read, you know, all the books that people read that prove that good leverage is good. It helps you build wealth. And I knew it logically. I knew this was the way to go. But emotionally, that was one of the scarier parts, is I had just worked so hard to pay off debt. And now I'm about to go back into it. And I'm going to spend what little money I had. I had a little more above this outside of the 13 plus 10 I put in it. And I can tell you how I spent that too here in a second. But it was real scary. Like, I didn't have much money and I was going back into debt. I was like, what in the world am I doing? But I knew if I just trust the process, it would work out in the long run.
Yeah. Trusting the process and trusting your friend. If you remember, how did that conversation go when you said you wanted to back out? What did he say to ease your fears?
It was not a loving conversation. I mean, we're like brothers. He's like, yeah, you're not backing out, bro. I've already worked hard to get this deal under contract and get it to you. And it's a good deal. And if you back out, then you're never going to buy. So I'm not taking that for an answer. Closing dates in a week or whatever it was. I mean, that was pretty much how it went. There was no option.
Did he make anything off of this deal?
Yeah, he brokered it. He was the agent.
Oh, so, I mean, he's the agent.
He got 3% of 68 grand or whatever.
Okay. Your friend was doing you a favor here. He was not really making that much money off of you.
No, he was not. He could have bought it for himself. Like, it was like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, it takes a good friend or a good mentor to kind of push you forward. And so when you had the 10,000 of rehab, what did you budget for that rehab, and did it actually come to fruition?
Yeah, we were pretty spot on, and I had help with that. We were pretty close to where we expected it to be. Luckily, it was just a lot of cosmetic work. So we had to go in and paint, patch up a little flooring issues, you know, clean up the bathrooms, add some like $150 vanities, new toilets, clean up the tubs. So we weren't having to rewire, we weren't having to put a new roof, none of that stuff. It was just your basic cosmetic. And so we snuck out of there about at what we thought we were going to spend.
Okay, awesome. And then finding contractors and all that stuff, did you just lean on your buddy or?
Yeah, leverage my network 100%.
That's always the best way, man, is referrals. And so did you end up refinancing it, or did you just fix it up and rent it out?
So I did refinance it probably 2 years in to recoup my down payment. And then I didn't refinance it right away. So I didn't burr. It wasn't a traditional burr deal.
Okay.
I refied, I don't know, 2 years later, year and a half later. I'd have to go back and look to figure out exactly. And then I sold it in 2021, I think it was. And,
okay. So just to recap too, is you bought it for 68, you put 10 into it. So now you're all in for, again, you said 80, well, let's say 85 with holding costs, et cetera, et cetera. And you sold it for 140. So that's like a $55,000 increase, right? In just a couple of years. And this is in like a cheaper market where like 55,000 is like almost 100% of what you bought it for, right? It's like 80%. And so like that is an insane deal. Like I call him your brother, but I guess he basically is your brother.
Yeah.
Definitely hooked you up. And so like what happens after that, man? Or what happened after, because I can't imagine you waited 3 years to buy your next one.
No, not quite. I actually just looked too, by the way, that house that I just told you about, my first deal, sold in May for $210,000. So somebody must have come in and renovated it and resold it. That area's grown, but
it's popping off.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, at this point I got a renter in place, going through, rents coming in, and I'm like, okay, I gotta do that again. It wasn't as scary as I thought, because you have all these fears when you buy. Is anybody gonna rent it? Is it gonna tear down?
Yeah.
You know, is this even gonna work? Am I gonna lose all my money? But I didn't, and I was like, wow, this is the first thing in my entire life that I can remember that I bought and it actually paid me. Like, think about that. Most of the time, buy things in life that just depreciate. Like, the money's gone, it vanishes. This one is paying me back. I was like, this is like magic. Let's go do that again. So I went to another property. I found this one on my own. And I had a realtor bring it to me, but I think it was on market. I'd have to go back and look in my hometown of Anderson, which is about 20 minutes away, 25 minutes away from the first one I bought, and did the same thing with it. I think it was around 75 grand. I'd have to look up the numbers and put 20% down, rehabbed it again, got a tenant in place, didn't refi right away. And so here I am with two properties and I'm fired up. It's like, hey, we just started this thing. And within, I don't know, call it 4 months, we've got two properties. Problem is, I actually don't have any more cash and not enough for a down payment. So now it's, okay, I got two rentals. That's great. That's going to be helpful for me here in about 15 years. But I want to, you know, experience more now. And so then we had to implement strategies that allowed us to scale to 19 more properties in 2019.
All right, bro, you can't just drop that and then not give us the secret sauce here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, at the time, I didn't know what it was called. It obviously was coined by somebody at Bigger Pockets called the BRRRR strategy: buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. Back in the day, before I knew all that, it was, hey, let's find us a good deal, put some money into it, refinance it and keep it moving, right? That was kind of, that's what we called it. And so I started implementing that. I would go and I'd find these undervalued deals. So deals that were either on market or off market that were undervalued and distressed. And so then I would use private money most of the time, sometimes hard money or a mix of two. I've also used a HELOC. Okay. So three ways to acquire these properties, and I would buy them in all cash or outright using private money, using a HELOC or using hard money or a combination of three, and then I'd rehab them with hard money, private money, or a HELOC. And then once I got it rehabbed, I would go to a bank and I would say, hey, I bought this property for X amount, made it pretty. It's now worth this, I think, based on comps that have sold in the area, the after repair value, I think, is this. The bank would go and they would order an appraisal on the property. So a small local bank would go and say, okay, well, let's go see what it's worth. So now it's worth all this extra. Then they would write me a check for 80% of that new appraised value, whatever it was worth after I rehabbed it. It's obviously worth more than when I bought it. They'd write me that check. I'd take that check through what's called a cash out refinance. I'd put it into my bank account. Then I would pay back my private lender, or I'd pay back the hard money lender, or I'd pay back the HELOC, whatever I used to buy and rehab the property. So I recouped all of my firepower that allowed me to get into this deal. And then I would go reinvest that into another deal, do the same thing, pull it back out, same thing, pull it back out. And we were able to scale pretty handsomely, pretty fast doing that.
And so how did you find these private investors and guys that were like wanting to actually work with you, given that you've only had two deals experience and, you know, you're some 28-year-old gung-ho kid who can't be stopped?
Yep. It's network. Like, I know people get pissed when they hear that. If you don't have a network, then you need to work on building one out. That's all I know how to tell you. Like, you have to put in work to do it. And so you start with family, you go to friends, you go to coworkers, you go to other investors, you go to local real estate meetups, and you find people who want to lend to good real estate deals. I've used a combination of all those. I've had family lend to me, I've had friends lend to me, I've had coworkers lend to me, and I've had other investors lend to me. I've done the entire gamut. And what you have to understand, if you've never used private money before, is you feel like a beggar. You're like, oh, will you please give me money? And you have to change your mindset. You're not begging for free money. Like, you're doing a business transaction where you're telling this person, hey, I'm going to offer you higher interest on your money than you can really get anywhere else at some of the lowest risk possible. Here is what the deal looks like. Do you want to do it? And you present that to them, you execute. And once you execute, it's a wrap. I mean, you get to the point where people are calling you and you're having to choose which private money lender to use. But, you know, sometimes private lenders aren't going to want to do an entire deal at once. Let's say you're buying a house for 70 and you need 30K in rehab. That means you're going to a private lender and asking them for $100,000. They never worked with you before. That may be a stretch for them. So what can we do instead? We can go to a hard money lender, who's just a professional private money lender. They will generally loan you anywhere from 85 to 95% of the purchase price of a home and then 100% of the rehab. So we just have to come up with that down payment. Well, if you don't have that down payment, guess where you can get it from? The private money lender. And instead of asking the private money lender for $100,000 to do this deal, now you go and say, hey man, I got this deal. I'm looking for $10,000 to $15,000 as a down payment. Would you cover it? I'll pay you 13% interest only payments. You know, we'll do it on 365 note amortized over 30 years and just get creative and work it that way.
We hope this episode is inspiring you to take action. If you're thinking about becoming a real estate agent or an agent who wants to join an investor-friendly team, just hit me up on Instagram at the Fi Guy, because we are growing our team in Denver, Seattle, San Diego, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, but also adding to our network in all 50 states. And if you didn't already know this, the Fi team provides a super supportive environment with one-on-one coaching, accountability, and ongoing training to help develop kick-ass, rockstar, investor-friendly real estate agents. So hit me up on Instagram at the Fi Guy, and we'll set up a time to chat. Can't wait to chat with you.
I love it, man. I'll be honest, like, that's the lever that I never really felt comfortable pulling. I actually had a mentor tell me before to not use other people's money because it's like too much time or too much effort, too much risk, and losing too much relationship capital at stake. And part of me is kicking myself, and part of me is like, yeah, whatever. Like, I own all my properties pretty much 100% to me, and I'm happy with that. So I just think it's interesting. And I was still able to scale and do things, you know, that way as well. And I just think it's super interesting how, you know, you can be cut from two different cloths and still achieve tons of success. But yeah, but I do, I will say that it's been a limiting belief for me. And I've now accepted money from friends and accepted notes from all these people. And I've done a handful of deals with that. But my first like 10, man, were just all me.
Just so, all you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that further. Were there any times where maybe it was a close call or any lessons learned when you're going to a hard money lender and a private money lender and juggling both?
No, I have not run into any issues, knock on wood. Hopefully you don't jinx me, Allie, but it's been pretty smooth selling for me. You just got to make sure this is where I talked about earlier. You need to have some, like I work with a lot of people to help them buy real estate. I set a criteria for the amount of money I think they need to have liquid before they can do it. Because if you start doing real estate like this, you still need to be able to cover your carrying cost. And so when you use hard money and private money, you have carrying costs. And so we got to be able to pay them that interest monthly while we're borrowing their debt. And so, you know, could you run into an issue? Absolutely. If you buy bad deals, or if you're just the worst operator on planet Earth, but if you're buying good deals and you do your due diligence on the front end and you know you're getting it undervalued and you feel conservative and confident about your rehab numbers and you're very close with your after repair value, put yourself in a very strong situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great, man. And so like when you're asking investors for money, are you showing them the deal? Like, are you like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. This is the, like you're showing them your spreadsheets and all that. Or do most of them not care? And at this point, they're just like, I trust you, bro. Take my 50 grand, give me my 15%, 10%, whatever, and like, just have at it.
When I started, or if it's a new lender, 100%. I give them the whole breakdown of everything. I check in with them. I'll send weekly updates of where we are with the property, what the rehab looks like. Like if it's a new private lender, trying to make them feel comfortable. But the majority of mine now, I don't usually have to go look for new ones anymore. They don't even ask. They're literally like, they literally are texting me, hey, bro, you need some money for a deal? Like, I get those texts pretty often. And if I say yes, they're like, all right, you know, how much you need? And if I say no, well, let me know. Like, I'm ready to lend to you. And I don't really have to do much. Show me to take that takes some while to, a while to build some trust. And, you know, it helps too. This is why I think not to go down this rabbit hole of a personal brand, but I think it's good in this day and age to build a personal brand because I am literally putting my deals out for the world to see. I've been interviewed by MarketWatch out of New York City who pretty much did a complete financial audit. Like it was chaos. So it's like people can come knowing it's like, all right, like what this guy's doing is real. Like, you know, and so it makes it a little easier for people to want to lend to me, especially strangers now. So I'd encourage anybody doing deals, start documenting it, you know, let people see you.
How has the real estate evolved from, you know, 2018, 2019, when you kind of got started till COVID, post-COVID? Have you had to change up your strategy at all?
So no, I haven't. I'd say the biggest thing that's evolved for me is I got into the short-term space. Like I've owned single family homes. And just to clarify, like Burr isn't the only strategy I use. It helped us scale very quickly. So it's something that I still use to this day. But I buy straight up. I buy Burr deals. I do partnerships. I've owned mobile home parks. I've owned short-term rentals. I would say when we had that big price increase, when was it 2021? And then rates started climbing. Short-term rentals got hard, in my opinion, because you had a lot of retail investors get into the space. And so where there used to be a ton of opportunity to hop in a decent area for a short-term rental and make really, really good cash flow, I think that's got, not that it's impossible now, it's just got harder to find because there's more competition. And now you have to optimize your listing if you want to stick out. Back in the day, there wasn't that much competition. So if you just had professional pictures, you didn't have to have all the amenities. You know, now you do. So I would say I've kind of slowed down in the short-term space. And then, you know, with the traditional long-term investing, not much has changed. I would say the one thing, there used to be more deals there for a while that you could find listed, and that slowed down 2021 into 2022. But I've seen towards the end of 2022 to today, I have bought two properties on market in the last 3 months that were fantastic deals. One's a flip. I bought it for 150. We're going to be all in at 50K rehab and ARVs 285 to 300 sitting on the market for over 30 days, you know? So I think there was a period. I really do think there was a period of time there when prices were really skyrocketing and then rates were going up too. It made it a little more difficult, but now everything's kind of like simmered out. And I think it's a fantastic time. This is me personally speaking, and this is what I'm doing in my own portfolio to buy, because I feel as though we're primed for another pretty strong run here in the next couple of years. Pretty much based on simple economics of supply and demand. Like our supply of housing in the US is so ridiculously low. And so when people either one get used to these rates, or number two, when they start simmering back down, everybody who's sitting on homes or haven't been able to buy yet, I think it's going to start picking up even more and drive the prices up. So, you know, that's my take on it. We'll see where that goes. I don't have a crystal ball, but I think it's a fantastic time to buy, and it's only going to reward those who do it.
I couldn't agree more. I think a lot of people are afraid to buy right now. And that old Warren Buffett saying goes, right? Be greedy when others are fearful, and be fearful when others are greedy. Yep. And so now seems like a good time to buy. My question to you, Jaron, is how do you know what strategy to do, right? Like when you've got such a tool, like how do you know what tool to pull out of your tool belt?
I look at my portfolio, maybe this is too simple, but it works for me. So I look at it as in two buckets. I got cash on cash and I got cash on cash return. Excuse me, cash flow and cash on cash return. It's been a long day. It's getting to be 5 p.m. over here in South Carolina. My brain's not working. But when I look at my portfolio, those are the two buckets that I'm trying to hit. Okay. And so when I am doing BRRRR deals, I look at that as my cash on cash return bucket. I don't necessarily care what my cash flow is. I don't want to be in the negative. But if, I mean, think about this. Okay, just take all the social media guru nonsense of cash flow this, cash flow that out of your mind. Cash flow is great. I'll talk about that in a second. There is a strategy that you can deploy that you can use somebody else's money or even use your own money, buy a property, make it pretty, and then get all that money back within a span of 4 to 6 months. And now you own this a very expensive asset, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 asset, and you have zero of your own dollars or maybe 3% of the entire purchase price of your own money in the deal, right? So we've saved on the amount of money we have in the deal compared to if you had to buy it traditionally with 20% down. Like if you buy a $200,000 house straight up, that means you're going to have to put $40,000 down. Well, if you BRRRR that and you have to leave $5,000 in the deal, well, we've just kept $35,000 in our pockets. And so our cash on cash return is just ridiculously high for the amount of money we've had to put in compared to what the property is now. And then we know based off of data, not short-term data, but long-term data, that over time, that property, even if we're not crushing in cash flow right now, okay, over time, the value of that property is going to continue rising based on previous data. Tenants are paying down that debt, so our net worth is growing. And then I think for 100 years straight, rents have increased. And so even though year one pro forma may be paying us $100 a month in cash flow after a BRRRR, what's year two look like? What's year five look like? What's year 10 look like? And so if you can get out of just looking at only year one pro formas, they're definitely important. Don't want to buy stupid properties now that are going to get you in trouble, but also start to think long term, you're going to put yourself in a position to be successful. And then on the other side is I try to buy property just for cash flow. And when I do that, I'm usually leaving more money in a deal. I bought a duplex, closed on it 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, to it's 74 grand, and each side's going to rent for $1,000 a piece. So I'm going to cash flow around $1,000 a month. Jeez. And so I could BRRRR that because ARV is 235. So I could go BRRRR that, but for now I'm going to keep that as a cash flow play and add another $1,000 a month that's coming in. And so that's kind of how I do mine. I balance mine out. It's like I keep a pot over here of my money and other people's money where I'm just stacking properties that I don't have to put much money in. And then I keep a big pool of my own money to where I can just deploy it into those high cash flow and properties. Traditionally have been short-term rentals and mobile home parks. They cash flow really well, but you run into some duplexes like I just did and, you know, crush it. So
I have probably the most important question of the show, Jaron. Can you put me on your email list? A duplex for 74. Dude, are you kidding? Duplexes here in Tucson are $300 minimum. Yeah. And they're not the type. But anyway, dude, that's crazy. With your portfolio, who's managing it? What does your management look like?
I have property managers for everything. So I don't manage anything. I probably spend 30 minutes or less a week on my current portfolio. So like I had to look at an email the other day. I told you $600 repair for limbs being on a roof. Took me 3 minutes to read it. Not even. Reply back. Approve. I was done. So like I only get notifications if a repair is over $500. That's what I've set it at. Or if a tenant's lease is renewing and they ask me, do I want to renew it or do I want to sell the property?
And do the managers that you have, are they doing both your short term, even though you're getting rid of the short term and the long term? Or do you have different property managers for those?
I have different property managers for those. Yep.
Yeah. What tools are you using?
So on the long term, I don't use any as far as management goes. I mean, I don't use any management on my side at all anymore. When I did, Doorloop was a good app. There was a time where I did manage. Doorloop's a good app for long term rentals. And then when I started my short term rentals, I was managing those, and Price Labs, which we still use today for our pricing, Turno to find our cleaners. I use AirDNA when I'm purchasing a property in Airbnb to make sure it's a good deal. And I think we used Guesty maybe to manage it. And then I think my property manager uses AppFolio. So, you know, from a management side, I think that's what our team uses. Luckily, I'm out of that mix. I just get to go focus on finding new deals.
Nice.
What's your strategy to find these new deals? Are you sending out mailers or?
No, man. So I'll harp on this. There is so much information out there that's paralyzing to new investors that they think they have to do all these different things to acquire leads. Set up cold calling, do mailers, run Google ads. I don't do any of that. Have never done any of that. I don't think you need to. If you're running a business to where you're wholesaling, sure, you need to have leads. I don't wholesale. I'm not trying to make a living off of doing real estate deals. I'm trying to build a portfolio, which means I don't need all those leads coming in that I have to sift through. I don't need to spend money. There are so many people who are spending their own time and resources to find good deals, and they want to give them to me. So I leverage those people because it's so easy. So mine will come from agents. So we have a huge network of investor-friendly agents for myself and for all of our folks who work with us in the Rental Academy in about 12 to 15 different markets. And we get fantastic leads that come in all the time. So I really, outside of that, I don't have to look anywhere outside of that because they bring on and off market leads. But I'm also on wholesalers list in my local area. I have made friends with contractors, with locksmith, electricians, you name it. So when they go to a property that is, you know, vacant and rough to fix it for an owner or whatever, before they put it on the market, they'll text me, right? I post on Facebook. So everybody in my town, in my network, now I don't have to post on Facebook because everybody in my town, in my network, found me on Instagram. But back in the day, before I had the brand, I'd let everybody know that I invest in real estate. And so I am under the game plan of let deals come to you, and then looking on Zillow, man, there's still so many good. I guarantee I can get on Zillow and within 10 minutes, find a good deal. You know, there's so many good deals that way. And so that's usually how we do it. I will say, to be fair, when I find a property in a good location, especially if it's where I'm at, like this duplex, I will, if it's local to me, I'll do it. If not, I'll have my boots on the ground in another area do it. I will drive around that block, that area, and find any houses that are vacant or run down. I'll make a list of those. I'll pull the owner's name and I'll try to contact them, see if they want to sell, because I know I can set the comps in that area. So, but it's a very targeted cold call. I'm talking like 5 to 7 properties. We're not cold calling all day. We're doing very, very detailed. So
yeah.
And then the other investors, last one's other investors, man. The other investors are always trying to do deals. I love doing transactions with other investors because they get it. You can say, hey man, show them your calculator, your pro forma. Hey, I have to buy it at this for this deal to make sense. Are you willing to sell it? Yes. Great. Let's do the deal. No, fine. Do you got anything else? Or you know anybody else who wants to offload? So
I love that you've kind of cultivated like a community that will just kind of bring you your own deals, right? I think that's huge. And people are knowing that you're always buying too, and that you can actually take it down. And honestly, like the biggest part of it is actually, if someone brings you a deal, either like do it or tell them the reason why you're declining it so they know that you're legit. I think like just ghosting somebody when they send you a deal is the worst thing to do because they'll never send you another one.
Fantastic tip right there. Fantastic tip. And they'll tell you, if you talk to investor-friendly agents, they will tell you like, I'm going to spend time on the people who engage with me. Like they're going to go to work for you.
Totally. Yeah. I can't tell you, like, I mean, I'm an investor from the agent in Denver, right? And I get probably 3 to 4 texts a day from flippers looking for these like killer deals. And I send them sometimes and I don't get a response for 2, 3, 4 days. I'm like, all right, dude. Well, like, you're not special to me. I don't need your business. Actually, you're more of a pain than mostly anybody else, than most of my other buyers. So yeah, make sure that you respond and treat them like, you know, treat us like people, you know?
Yeah. And on that same note too, sometimes people just have very unrealistic expectations. And maybe it just still takes that conversation with an agent or someone who knows more about that specific market to know like, hey, Tucson does not meet the 1% anymore unless you have to go off market for a while. You know, maybe you'll get 0.5 on the market. But yeah, I have the same conversations, Craig, where it's almost like the canned email, no matter the canned text, no matter who it comes from. Hey, I just finished up my latest flip. Do you have anything in store for us next? We're looking to buy something else. We'll let you represent us. And then I'm sending them some deals that don't work for my buyers. And they're like, oh no, well, we're looking for this sort of cash flow. Like, that's unrealistic. That is, maybe go look in a different market. So yeah, it just takes that conversation for sure. You have to have some realistic expectations, have your pulse on the market.
Really quick before we get out, Jaren, is have you tasted the flavor of the month subject to seller financing? Have you done any of those kind of deals this year?
So not this year. I've done seller financing multiple times. I haven't done it recently when the deal makes sense. I tell folks, all of us have in the social media space, have our niche that we talk about. It's a marketing ploy. It's a marketing strategy, right? We're able to reach more people and ultimately help more people if we can focus in on one thing we do. But when it comes to actually doing the real estate deals, you have to do what makes sense at the time and what makes sense for you. So if seller finance makes sense on a deal compared to going to a bank, do seller financing. If subject to makes sense on a deal, do subject to. If burring makes sense, burr. If buying it straight up makes sense, do it. If flipping makes sense, do it. So know how to deploy each of those strategies, but do what makes sense. And I'll tell you, some strategies require more effort than others. And I've been blessed with the community and following that I've built. I tend to attract people who are kind of in the same stage of life as me. And a lot of my messaging is, hey, I've been able to build this life-changing portfolio while working a full-time job. I got 4 kids, all under 7 years old. I'm involved at our church. I'm involved at the YMCA and in the community. I don't have time, nor do I want to set aside time. Well, maybe that's the better word. I don't want to set aside time to go and have to find these special deals where there are great opportunity to do a creative financing deal, educate the seller, convince their listing agent, if it's listed, to do it and go through that entire process. There's fantastic opportunity there. It's not what I want to do. I already told you guys how I get my deals. I want to do it easy. The easy way, build a strong portfolio. And I'll tell you, it worked. It worked for us. So I'm not changing. I'm keeping my blinders on. It. Somebody else can go chase the shiny object. I'm going to do what worked for me.
Amazing. And so where are you at today, man? So like, if you don't mind sharing, like unit count, like what's your passive income from that? And, you know, it sounds like it took you 5 or 6 years to get to this point.
Yep. So we bought that first property in 2018. We just transacted on a lot of properties, but I think we're sitting around 25-ish. We're in that ballpark. We have 5 figures a month coming in cash flow, in the teens, and our net worth, we passed the multi-million mark 1.5 years ago. So it's crazy. It took forever to get to that million mark. And then, it kind of goes a lot faster once you get there. And it's crazy, man. We had over $100,000 in debt. I don't come from money. We've never been given anything. And statistically, we shouldn't be where we are, but I'm sitting in a nice house on 11 acres and we got a big portfolio and thriving business and everybody's happy and we get to travel and we go out to eat. And if I want a steak from Longhorn, I'll go get a steak from Longhorn. It's like we do whatever we want, but it wasn't always like that. But sometimes you got to pay your dues, but if you will, and you'll follow the path once you get to that freedom. And you know, I'm sure you talk about this a lot, Craig. Freedom isn't retirement. I think there's this, you know, from people who are jealous or just don't want to change, they say, well, I don't want to just not do anything. Well, me either. Here I am on a podcast. Here I am with a business. I didn't have to start this business, but it gives you the opportunity to do what you want. And I would encourage everybody who's not at that point yet, get there. It's amazing.
Yeah, man. I love that, dude. Okay. One more question. They just keep coming to me. I can't let you go, brother.
Oh, you're good.
How do you combat, you know, maybe some people at your church, right? Or some people that are also believers that are saying the love of money is the root of all evil. Sounds like you've got enough. You've got your 11 acres, your house, you're multimillionaire. Why aren't you giving all that? Why aren't you giving that back, bro? Like, do you get that at all? Do you fight with that at all? and curious as to where you land on it.
Yeah, so I don't hear it. You know, it was a weird scenario for us. We live in a very small town. I was able to hide my wealth for a long time. We lived in a very modest home. You know, we still to this day, both my cars combined, Toyota Highlander, 2020 and 2019 F-150, they combined $70,000. So it's like nobody knew until we moved into this new home. It's like 5,600 square feet on a hill on the way to my dad's church, bunch of land. And people were like, what's going on here? And then I started the brand. And now, you know, you can't go anywhere in town without anybody knowing. So I'm sure people say stuff behind my back. Nobody's saying anything to me about it with a clear conscience. Say, I don't love money. I really love freedom. And money to me is just a tool. And if you can free yourself up and give yourself your time back, then it allows you to do those things that you're called to do. It gives you more opportunity. No, not that God can't use you in whatever place you're in. He 100% can. But when you have resources and you're open to allowing him to do whatever in your life, then it gives you a lot more opportunity. We're able to give a lot to our church, give a lot to people who need stuff, different organizations. And we wouldn't be able to do that if we wouldn't have built wealth. So that's my answer to those folks.
Yeah, I just love what you said there, is that God has basically allowed all of these people to tout financial freedom for a reason. A lot of people are going to go to work, and when you're working 40 hours a day, you're certainly not getting closer to God, right? And then you're going to come home in your commute, and maybe you are, but probably not. Then you got your family. And so what better way to get closer to the Creator than to have freedom, right? You don't have to worry about that anymore. And now you feel at ease, and you can get deeper there. So I just love that, man. But I'm always curious, and I like to ask that question.
Yeah.
Allie, anything you want to add there?
I just love the grit that you've had to keep your blinders on the entire time through your time with, in the beginning, before even investing with the debt. Like, it can be so easy to get distracted, especially now when you just by scrolling on Instagram within 4 minutes, you can have a couple of different other strategies, shiny object syndrome here or there. But you kept your blinders on for 4 years working on just paying off your debt. And then on the investment side, again, like you said, you kept your blinders on one strategy at a time, and you haven't even, you don't, there's no need to do everything. So I really like that. That is a consistent theme with you as a person, and you implement that in the areas of your life. And that's how you've gotten to where you are now. And I really admire that.
Well, thank you. And I would encourage anybody to listen to this. If, you know, if you don't take anything else from anything any of us have said, just do that. Decide what you want, drown out the noise, and just go get it. Because there are a ton of different avenues that can lead you to financial freedom or whatever your goal is. But once you make the decision, if you waver halfway on the journey, you're going to lose ground. You know, and I fight this, Craig, you guys may do this in my business. You know, it's like I've set on, hey, we're doing this to generate more leads. And then I'll see somebody doing this. And it's like, oh, I want to jump to, oh, well, if we try this, and I'll have to catch myself. Because it's like, no, we said that we're focusing on this right now. And if we take our focus off of this, then we're going to lose resources and energy, and we're going to actually lose ground. And so if you do that in all areas of your life, just make sure you're making the, make sure you're putting the blinders on in the right direction though.
Totally. Absolutely, yeah. Man. And so where are you heading next? What's your goal? What's the next bogey you're trying to hit?
Yeah, I would say in the real estate space, just continuing to buy good deals. You know, my goal was 30 units, I think it was, or 25 by 30. We got really close. Whatever the number was, we were like too short. So I felt like, hey, you know, whatever, we were close enough to accomplishing that. I would say, you know, at this point, continue. We've got a lot of units that we've burned. So I'm really focusing, you know, on some cash flow opportunities right now, building up even more cash flow. And then, you know, really focusing on our business, on the Finance Cowboy business. It's really, really cool. I always heard people talk about this, but you don't understand it until you get there. Now that I'm at a place where I've had success and I feel very confident teaching it to others, the fact that I get to do that for a living is pretty darn awesome. And so I would say, you know, the biggest passion for me is getting to help as many people as possible do what we've done, because it can be done. I'm telling you, man, we're just normal people. There's nothing special here. Not an Ivy League, or, you know, I always make the joke, like, it seems like a great guy. It's like Alex Hormozi. He's the big name right now. And people are like, he comes across as like this everyday dude with this tank top on. And I'm like, you guys understand he graduated like magna cum laude from Vanderbilt. Like, yeah. You're not that. Like, yeah. You glean from him, pick up all you can, but you're not as smart as he is. I'm not as smart as he is. You're never going to be as smart as he is. So you better figure out what simple people can do, right? And so I don't mean that to discourage anybody. Maybe that's not the best advice to give on this podcast, but I'm trying to make a point here. It's like, you don't have to graduate magna cum laude from Vanderbilt to be successful. You can be an everyday average person and go change your life.
Totally. Absolutely, man. I love that. I think that's the one thing you can take from the other one thing you can take from this episode, right? Is like, there's not really an excuse, right? There's the smartest people in the world. There's the dumbest people in the world. But if you're the dumbest person in the world, can listen to a handful of podcasts, read a few books, and do something with real estate and get the right people around them to actually achieve success. So love that, bro. All right, man. We have to head into the final part of our show, which we call our final four. But before we get there, any last words of wisdom you want to give to the audience?
No, I think I've departed all the wisdom that is in this small little brain up here. It's just, I hope you take what I said and go apply it. If you just listen to it and feel good and your hairs on your arms stand up and you get the tingles, like that means nothing. Get over that and go start doing stuff. You got debt, pay it off. If you're out of debt and you got capital sitting on the side, go buy a property. Whatever stage you're in the process, let's go. Take action.
I love it. Hallie, you know what time it is?
It's time for the final.
The final four.
Kick us off.
Will do. First question is, what book are you currently reading? Are you still on Dave Ramsey?
No, I
Total Money Makeover.
Total Money Makeover. Chapter two. We've made it past that. I have been reading and just finished up pretty much The E-Myth. I am drawing a blank on the author. If any of you guys know who it is, sorry, author, for not giving you a shout out. But it is essentially like, I am a sales guy. This is probably supposed to be rapid, so I won't ramble on any of the others. But I'm a sales guy by heart. That means I just like to go get business. I love to make connections with people. Systems and operations are not my thing inherently. Now I have a business with all these full-time employees. And I was like, okay, this thing's going to blow up unless I put some procedures and operating systems in place. So that's been a great book for me.
Nice.
Love it. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I would say what I mentioned earlier. There's probably something more profound, but my dad instilling in me, pay now, play later. It's so simple, but if you cling on to it, you'll be so successful in life.
Yeah. And I believe you mentioned this earlier in the podcast, but you might have a different answer now. What's your why? Why are you doing all this?
Yep. So my why when I started was to be able to wake up and do what I wanted to do every day. I think that was huge for me. We're pretty much at that point now. And so it's interesting, your whys can shift. I think at the core of any why is freedom in some regard. But now it's, how do I create a legacy for my family? I got four kids, and that looks like a lot of things financially, spending time with them, being there, being a good support, showing them what life looks like, being a role model. And so that's definitely at the core of what I'm doing now.
I love that. Last question. If you had to lose your hands or your feet, which would you choose?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to say feet, because then I can go get a prosthetic and we can keep it moving. So keep it moving. I don't know. I don't want to lose either, bro. This is bad motion.
You got stairs in your house, your 5,000 square feet? Because that would be tough to get up and down them, maybe.
Hey, it'd be a good excuse to get an elevator or something.
There you go. Awesome. All right, brother. We mentioned the finance cowboy, right? Where can people find out more about you, though, if they want to follow your story?
I think the best place to go is we have a free Facebook group that talks about all things residential real estate investing. It's realestatewithjaren.com. realestatewithjaren.com. Join it. It's completely free. We're posting content in there, doing live streams. We got some of the best coaches in the world. You're going to get a ton of free value, meet a lot of people, and doesn't cost you anything. So obviously I'm on all the social medias under @financecowboy. You can go find me there.
Awesome, brother. Sounds good, man. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure having you, and thanks for staying on a little late. East Coast time. Go spend some time with your family.
I love it. Thank you guys. Allie, I got to get a t-shirt coming your way. I appreciate y'all having me. All you listeners, go get it done.
Thanks, Jaren.
See you, man.
Thank you.
And that was Jaren Sustar. Allie, what did you think about Jaren?
Like you said in the intro, it is like old-fashioned way of just investing one property at a time, continuing to do that. And over time, you will have a nice portfolio. You might also have, if you want, a 5,000 square foot home.
Yeah.
With no, 11 with acres. No feet. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. If he doesn't have feet, his home is only 2,000 square feet. So now what? Yeah. No, I think that's really funny, man. I just called you man. Bro, dog, yo.
Yeah.
You're one of the dudes now. You're one of the dudes. Yeah.
I'm used to it.
Yeah, you're used to it. Yeah. No, I think I love the old fashioned. It almost like kind of is on brand with cowboy. I don't know why when I think cowboy, I think like Westerner, old fashioned, just like kind of hard nosed, tough guy. Mm-hmm. And so like, I don't even know if he knows this or if he knows that that's how I think of him, but like, that's what I think of him. He's doing the old fashioned way. I really admire it and I love it. And I think that is true real estate investing. You hear people touting courses on subject to and seller financing on Airbnb and short-term rental. I hate to say it, guys. These are just seasons. Right? There's mm-hmm. seasons. Sub 2 and seller financing, no one even heard of it 2 years ago. Airbnb, it's a cool thing, but it's already on the decline. People are kind of moving out of the space. The government is against it. There's only a matter of time. And so it's this like just boring real estate that makes you really wealthy. And so I heard a quote the other day, and it was something along the lines of like pride, ego, followers, Instagram, all that stuff, that will get you on stage. And that's probably where a lot of people would like to be, on the top, whatever it is. But what's going to get you on the beach is just boring, passive cash flow. And so like, it's the boring stuff that gets you to actually where you want to be, not just on the spotlight or wherever, or where other people think you want to be. And so I just thought that was kind of a cool analogy, and I totally butchered it, and I'm sorry, but I think y'all get the idea. So
I think you said that perfectly. I like that. I want to be on the beach.
Thanks, Allie. I know, I kind of liked it because it was like, yeah, people want to be on stage. They want to be recognized. They want to be the special person at the event. But then they're like, actually, they'd rather be on the beach. I'm like, yeah, touche. Awesome. Cool. Allie, well, as always, it's a pleasure. If you guys are listening all the way to the end here, that means you must really love us. And if you would, please leave us a rating or review. It tremendously helps the show out, allows us to reach more people, and allows us to spread this love of financial independence. So, leave us a review, give us a follow on Instagram, and we'll see you all next week.
That's it for this episode of Investify. We hope that these nuggets of real estate wisdom lead to more savvy financial planning and a clearer path towards financial freedom. For more content like this, subscribe to the show at investify.com. Don't forget to leave a rating and share it with your friends. Together, we can transform more real estate newbies into successful and clever investors. Thank you so much for listening. See you on the next one.